From Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine on New York State government and politics. Your host is Dave Gallipoli, with commentary by political scientist Dr. Alan Shartok.
Coming up on this week's Gazette, we'll wrap up a primary day which didn't have too many surprises. An assemblyman criticizes New York's attitude toward organically grown food. Debate has begun on an important education topic. Those stories, Alan Shartok will join us, and there'll be much, much more on this week's Legislative Gazette. Primary Day 1990 is over in New York State, and our Brian Shields has this report on the winners and the losers.
Carol Bellamy, fresh off a strong victory in the New York Democratic primary, has set her sights on Republican State Controller Edward Regan as she continued her political comeback. Bellamy handily beat Westchester County Clerk Andrew Spano in the Democratic primary. She had left politics for a stint on Wall Street after losing a 1985 mayoral primary to then-Mayor Edward Koch. The 48-year-old Bellamy admitted to cheering supporters that she had butterflies as she waited for the primary results. As it turned out, there was little for Bellamy to worry about. She ran extremely well in New York City, as expected, but also pulled plenty of votes from outside the metropolis. She even ran strongly in Spano's home county of Westchester.
Tomorrow, and in fact 1 minute from now, starts the big race for November. And we are going to win that race in November. That's what we're going to do. Because we are going to give the voters of New York a choice. A choice between somebody who has been a vigorous watchdog, which I assure you I shall be, as contrasted with a passive observer who's just looked on as the state's credit rating has gone down there with Louisiana and Massachusetts. They're going to have a choice between a fiscal reformer who's balanced state and local budgets and somebody who's allowed the state deficit to grow to more than $4 million. The voters of New York will have to make a choice between someone who will put their money to work for New York, as contrasted with somebody who loses their money by investing in Boston buildings. That's where we're going to make a difference there in the fall.
Election officials reported a low turnout across most of the state. Of New York's 3.9 million enrolled Democrats, less than 10% voted in the controller's primary. Susan John defeated Gary Proud in a primary for the 131st State Assembly seat in Rochester following a heated campaign marked by the candidates' disagreement on abortion and the death penalty. Proud, a 14-year incumbent of the Monroe County seat, forced the primary after the Democratic Party selected John as its candidate. Proud attacked John, who supports women's rights to abortion, as a one-issue abortion zealot. John labeled Proud an anti-choice extremist. Earlier this year, Proud announced he would switch his position and support the death penalty. That switch drew added significance because the Assembly needed just one vote to override Governor Cuomo's veto of death penalty legislation. John opposes the death penalty. John's campaign received an unexpected last-minute boost from an endorsement from Governor Cuomo, who rarely gets involved in primaries. Syracuse Common Councilor Joan Christensen defeated former State Fair Director Joseph O'Hara for the Democratic nomination in Onondaga County's 119th Legislative District. Her victory is considered an upset since the party had backed O'Hara. Frances Sullivan has a legitimate chance to become Oswego County's first women representative in state government. Sullivan beat Michael Yurden in the Republican primary for the 117th Assembly District. In a congressional primary, Sean Strub, the primary opponent of former Congressman John Dow for the 22nd district seat, in an emotional speech, conceded defeat to homophobia and prejudice. Strub ran as an openly gay Democratic candidate. In his concession speech, an emotional Strub said he wanted to address the real issue behind why he lost. He told supporters it was because of homophobia and prejudice against homosexuals and lesbians. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Brian Shields.
Joining us now is our political observer, Dr. Alan Shartok of the State University of New York at New Paltz. Alan, the primaries are over. You predicted who was going to win the single statewide race. What are your thoughts now about the controller's race?
Well, I still don't know why Andy Spano got into it, except as he lost very, very badly, as I knew he would, and as I had said he would, and as I suspect he knew he would. So the only question I had is whether or not he thought that by getting into it he had a shot at sort of increasing name recognition for future endeavors. I don't know. He conducted himself very well. He didn't say a mean thing about Carol Bellamy. She didn't really say anything mean about him. So now it's Carol Bellamy versus Ned Regan.
Handicap that one.
Well, I think that one always goes with the incumbent, except that Ned Regan has had a couple of really rough years. The voters of New York like to have somebody of the other party. They don't always do it, but they like to have somebody of the other party handling the books while the other party is in power. So you would have to think that Ned becomes the leader in this thing and that Carol is the underdog. However, a couple of things. The voters are in an ugly mood. New York State's finances are not particularly good. The governor looks like a shoo-in versus Renfrey. You don't know where anger focuses, and you know there's a potential for some kind of voter rebellion. The other thing is that, of course, Carol Bellamy, there are still many more Democrats in New York State than there are Republicans. Carol Bellamy is a Democrat. She's been around for a while. She has a tremendous name recognition in New York City. She was one of their top politicians for years. So it could be a very, very close race. She once heard me say in some venue that I thought Ned was the leader, and she got very angry with me and told me I was absolutely wrong and I was going to see that I was wrong. Maybe she's right.
It's Rochester area Assemblyman Gary Proud. Now, he was endorsed, he was not endorsed by governor, disendorsed by Governor Cuomo. Does Cuomo take some credit here?
Well, I think that he won't grab the credit, but I think that it didn't help Gary Proud. Gary Proud was in a lot of trouble. He knew it. He was always anti-death penalty. And then, of course, there was a serial murder situation in Rochester, and he did a flip-flop. And in politics, a flip-flop is a very dangerous thing because the people you are deserting, in other words, the anti-death penalty people, say, well, that guy's a rat because he deserted the cause. The new people may not suspect you. They say, well, he's a little late to this now, so we might want to go somewhere else. He was in a lot of trouble. Then he went ahead and, of course, annoyed the governor by turning around and going the other way on the death penalty and deserting the governor's position. And it's very, very close, as you know. One or two votes can make the difference in terms of whether we're going to have a death penalty in New York State. Cuomo obviously was annoyed, called him up, and they had a talk. But I spoke to the governor about this, and he says that he did not endorse Proud's opponent except for one thing, and that is that Proud used the promotional material from Cuomo when Cuomo had endorsed him 4 years before, implying that he was endorsing him 4 years later. That, said Cuomo, was dirty pool, and that's why he endorsed the opponent. To see an incumbent lose in New York State is extraordinarily rare, and that's what we saw in the Gary Proud case.
Legislative Gazette political observer Dr. Alan Shartok. For more analysis on the primaries this week, Brian Shields spoke with New York Post investigative editor Fred Dicker.
No surprise there in the contest for state controller. How do you size it up?
Well, it's a little bit of a surprise. Ned Bellamy did even better than I thought she would do. For whatever reason, and I'm sure there was some things that went on behind the scenes, Andrew Spano, the Westchester County clerk, decided not to make a race against Bellamy. Earlier, when he first started out, he was very critical in attacking Bellamy, alleging she had no executive experience, which he was billing as his strength. By midsummer, though, he backed off. Apparently, some of the state Democrats, probably some of the governor's people, spoke with him. And from then on in, it was sort of a love fest between Bellamy and Spano. I think Bellamy is going to be a very formidable candidate. She's on the road. She's on a road to an important political comeback, and I think she's going to give the state controller Ned Regan a heck of a race.
Do you think Governor Cuomo will give her much support?
Well, that's a $64 question. A lot of people expect the governor to try to help Regan, surprising as that may seem. I don't know. I think he'll have his finger up in the air that is feeling the wind. He'll also be looking at his polls. If he thinks Bellamy is likely to win, I think he'll try to help her. If he thinks that Regan is strong or could use a little help to win or would require a little help to win, it's possible he'll tilt towards Regan. The argument being that Ned Regan has been a relatively pliant Republican controller, generally supportive of Governor Cuomo, certainly no challenge to the governor. You'd be hard-pressed to think of a time when Ned Regan ever stood up to Cuomo. Bellamy, on the other hand, is very strong-willed, very independent, and many people think that she turned into a kind of an Elizabeth Holtzman for the state, Holtzman being the new city controller in New York City, who's already giving Mayor Dinkins a hard time down there. Cuomo may not want a newcomer on the scene who conceivably could even one day challenge him for governor.
Gary Proud, the Rochester Assemblyman, lost his Democratic primary. He, of course, was the man who switched his position on the death penalty to pro, and Governor Cuomo endorsed his opponent.
Yeah, I'm not sure how much we can read into that. Keep in mind that Gary Proud switched his position on the death penalty because he already knew he was in some trouble with the voters in his home district. So it may be he was switching because he already knew that support for him was eroding, and this was an attempt to shore it up. Cuomo didn't formally come out against Proud until last week, and that wasn't because of his death penalty stand. It was because Proud was circulating campaign literature which suggested that the governor had endorsed him. That's what apparently led to Cuomo's decision to go against Proud. Whether that was decisive in defeating Proud or whether Proud was going down anyway, and that's why he changed his death penalty stand, and that's why he used this literature which apparently misrepresented Cuomo's position, is unclear. But the message certainly is going to be out there that if you go up against Governor Cuomo, you could pay a very high price politically.
The fear and the concern about the crime situation in New York City seems to be coming to a head. Will Governor Cuomo be stained by this at all, or will it mostly be David Dinkins?
No, Cuomo will be stained or politically damaged and has been politically damaged. 1982, when he ran for governor the first time, he said he would make crime and the battle against crime his number one priority. I'm not denying that he's made it an important priority, but the statistics all show that in the 8 years the governor has been governor, and I'm sure he would concede this, the crime situation downstate and many other parts of the state as well has gotten worse and worse and worse, and it's reached a point now where it's a topic of conversation to just, you know, to raise the question of will New York survive? And if Cuomo runs for president, you can be sure that any opponent he has in the Democratic primary, and certainly from President Bush, the Republican, presumably the Republican opponent, would raise the question of how effective has the governor been on the number one issue in New York, fighting crime. And I think the statistics will suggest that certainly the battle is being lost, that the governor has not come up with a way of satisfactorily reversing the trends towards more and more crime.
Fred Dicker of the New York Post, speaking with the Legislative Gazette's Brian Shields. The New York State Board of Regents has begun debate on an emotionally charged topic, which has drawn support and criticism from the state's top education officials. Lee Farbman has more.
The topic, should parents have the right to yank their children out of poor public schools in favor of better ones? The state's Education Policy Setting Board started discussions on a proposal from Education Commissioner Thomas Sobel that takes a step in that direction, and it might even allow for some students to attend private schools at public expense. Unlike at least a dozen other states, New York does not permit students to cross school district lines in search of a better school. New York State School Boards Association Executive Director Lou Grummet says he is completely opposed to the idea.
One of the reasons why you have public school districts is because of the belief of the public that education is public responsibility. And as a public responsibility, it's shared by all the taxpayers and all the people, and they get together and they elect school boards to make those decisions. And when school boards, they don't like the decisions school boards make, they tend to vote down their budgets or they tend to vote them out of office. If you gave parents total control over where children shall be, several things will happen. First of all, 25% of New Yorkers have children in schools, which means those 25% will be making decisions for the other 75%. Second, I think you will have a situation that you could conceivably have segregation of schools, where parents who are wealthier and have greater resources will pull their children into certain schools, and you might have children being placed into white schools and black schools and Hispanic schools. This is not a wild idea. This is what happened in the South when they had parental choice. They called them academies.
Advocates of expanded choice contend it would inject a dose of free enterprise into a slumbering school system, prodding bad schools and teachers to shape up or be forced out. Grummet calls the slumbering label unfair and wonders if our educational system should have a dose of free enterprise.
We're talking about children who can't be discarded, and we're talking about each child being totally different. You're not talking about assembly lines. You're not talking about decisions are being made on profit margins. I might add, by the way, that the business community, which has been calling for a great deal of choice, isn't doing so well itself in the world on a competition system. They seem to be constantly looking for exceptions for themselves. But even they, I think, would admit, when they're serious, that we're not talking about production lines turning out children. we're talking about sensitive teachers and sensitive administrators dealing with each child's need. And if you begin to worry about profit motives and you're beginning to worry about competition in order to make the bottom line, children are going to lose. They're going to be left in the dust. And the very kids who aren't able to do well for reasons beyond their control, kids who came up in a home where there might be drugs or in a broken home and who need special attention, might be cast aside.
Grummet says if parents are worried about their schools, they should get involved in their school board and make their feelings known. I'm Lee Farbman for the Legislative Gazette.
You're tuned to the Legislative Gazette on Public Radio. I'm Dave Gallantly. Governor Cuomo declared this past week Organically Grown Week, but a state assemblyman says the Department of Agriculture and Markets is not doing enough to help organic farmers. Bruce Robertson reports.
Ulster County Democrat Maurice Hinchey is chairman of the Assembly's Environmental Conservation Committee, and he says in a time when more and more people are looking into consumption of organic food, the State Department of Agriculture and Markets support for organic farmers is waning.
Well, it is not nearly high enough. The New York State Department of Agriculture and Markets has got to and ought to assume a leadership role in the whole movement of organic agriculture. Unfortunately, I believe the department is falling far behind. I think it's fallen more behind in the last couple of years. There had been some movement in this direction that looked promising, but in the last couple of years, I think that we've lost some momentum in the department here, and I think that that momentum has to be recaptured.
At a recent Albany news conference, Hinchey was asked if Ag and Markets Commissioner Richard McGuire is at all responsible for that loss. Hinchey says McGuire is partly to blame.
His philosophy is one that is geared substantially toward agricultural inputs, toward chemical inputs in agriculture, toward agribusiness generally, and away from what we are seeing increasingly in the agricultural and agricultural activity in other parts of this country and the world.
One of the complaints is that organic food is not attractive to look at. While Hinchey admitted that, he added there are advantages to organic food and that the situation continues to improve.
It is a drawback, particularly the economics of it, and that will change. As a matter of fact, it's changing right now. Organically grown or grown vegetables and fruits, or fruits that are produced with less agricultural inputs, are becoming less expensive. They have been more expensive, and that's true. That's been a drawback. And it is also true that we have been trained, I use the word trained advisedly, to look for fruits and vegetables that seem to be shaped perfectly, that seem to be colored perfectly. We think that an apple that is redder is going to taste better. Fact of the matter is, an apple with some green on it is usually crisper and tastes much better.
And as for those who say there is not much call for organic food, Hinchey says there is a demand, and it's growing.
I represent a very important agricultural constituency, and I think that that agricultural constituency across the state, more and more, is understanding that, first of all, the public wants organically grown vegetables, or at least fruits and vegetables that are grown with fewer pesticides and fewer artificial inputs. That's what the consumer wants. That's what the men and women who consume and the children who consume food products in this state and across the country want increasingly.
In fact, according to the second annual Lewis Harris Organic Index poll, 84% of Americans would prefer organically grown fruits and vegetables if they were available. 44% of us would pay more, and almost 65% said that long-term health benefits are the single most important reason for eating organic produce. Currently, according to data compiled by Market Data in Valley Stream, New York, only 1-3% of the nation's produce is organically grown. But this is expected to rise to 8-9% by the year 1995. For the Legislative Gazette, this is Bruce Robertson.
For this past week, Albany was the site of a national conference aimed at improving the efficiency of state governments. Karen DeWitt reports.
The productivity experts from around the country gathered to swap stories of more effective and cheaper ways of running government and to, through improving output, help change the popular image of government workers as lazy, inept, and swimming in a sea of unnecessary paperwork. Sandra Hale, who heads the state of Minnesota's successful productivity program begun in 1986, says bureaucrats have been badmouthed by the highest elected government workers in the country, presidents, for the last several years.
We've been working hard to turn that perception around and to counteract the 12 years of government bashing, at least 12 years, and you heard about that this morning, from the federal level on down. Very destructive. Carter did it. Reagan did it in spades. Nixon had done it before. And, of course, it just has this enormous fallout on all of us.
Hale, who admits good government doesn't usually make news, says a major point she stresses is that state employees do have a customer, the taxpayer. Thea Howeth, who runs Governor Cuomo's Office of Management and Productivity, which he founded in 1983, agrees with Hale.
In the public sector, our clientele, our customers, are the taxpayers, and we give them services in a lot of different areas, from registering their motor vehicles to, monitoring the state parks.
Cuomo credits the Office of Management and Productivity with saving $500 million since 1984. Howeth says one big reduction has been in paperwork.
That may sound like something that ought to be relatively easy, just throw out every third form or something, but it's not that simple. What we are doing is training people in the actual design of paperwork. You know, there are good ways and bad ways of asking questions and asking people for information.
Lynanne Sackett, an advisor to the Governor's Management and Productivity Council and who used to head up a technology development council that linked top CEOs to fledgling firms, says ideas that work in private enterprise to pare down unnecessary steps can sometimes be transferred to state government. For example, she says, in the Department of Motor Vehicles.
They have reduced the lines. We now have things like two-year registrations, whereby we used to have to get in line and every year go get your auto registered. Now, automatically in the mail, you can opt for a two-year paperwork flow. And it reduces all the personal contact.
The original intent of the two-year registration, however, was to help increase revenues to close a state budget gap. Governor Cuomo, addressing the gathering, repeated an often-told story of how a local mayor once, by way of introducing Cuomo, read from Webster's Dictionary the definition of a governor to illustrate that people don't often think of state government and productivity as having anything to do with one another.
A governor from Webster's, a device attached to a machine to see that it does not operate at maximum efficiency.
Cuomo says long-practiced patronage systems, now discouraged, help create an inefficient system.
That meant you gave work to all the people who won. Make room for the Democrats. Make room for the Republicans. Make room for jobs, and then they'll work for you in the election time. It is the way you preserved your political strength. And that worked counter to all ideas of management and productivity. It was exactly the opposite. You started with the principle that you must proliferate payroll.
Thea Howeth says making state government more efficient will take on greater and greater significance as states' financial situations worsen. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
And Karen DeWitt's report, courtesy of the New York Public Radio Albany Bureau. Joining us next with a look at some other events taking place in state government this week is Paul Rosenthal with our legislative notebook.
Republican gubernatorial candidate Pierre Rinfrae says Governor Mario Cuomo should reveal how he's going to deal with any potential deficits in next year's state budget before Election Day. Economist Rinfrae is predicting a budget deficit of $2.5 billion or more for next year. Cuomo administration officials predicted in February next year's deficit could approach $1 billion, but they've said nothing about it since then. Cuomo campaign spokesman William Cunningham dismissed Rinfrae's challenge as a purely political comment. Cunningham says the governor is not about to change the budget process just because Rinfrae stamps his feet. Rinfrae also announced that Vice President Dan Quayle will attend a $1,000 per person cocktail party for him on September 18th in Manhattan. You can scratch one name off the ballot in this year's governor's race. The State Board of Elections said the nominating petitions for activist G2 Weyusi to get on the ballot were invalid. This ends Weyusi's attempt to run for governor on the Independent Unity Party line. Weyusi needed more than 20,000 signatures to get on the ballot, and the Elections Board says the candidate collected 4,000 less than that. The petition signatures were challenged by the State Liberal Party and the New Alliance Party. Black activist Weyusi had been called a virulent anti-Semite by Liberal Party boss Ray Harding. State Controller Ned Regan has warned that Off-Track Betting Corporation, despite its optimism, faces a grim future. Regan said that the corporation needs to drastically streamline its operations because betting volume has stagnated. He said nearly half of OTB's 98 branch offices are operating at a loss. The controller said that means OTB management must reduce costs and close unprofitable branches. Regan said OTB's losses are New York City's losses because they cut into the already diminishing revenues the city gets from OTB. A bus boycott in Buffalo. About 500 State University of New York at Buffalo students protested increased bus fees Monday by walking instead of riding. The students walked 5 miles between the university's two campuses. The students marched 10 abreast, shouting, "We won't pay." The students are demanding a repeal of all user fees proposed by the administration. The fees were proposed in response to a statewide budget crisis. A chemistry student said she feels the administration is trying to cheat students out of their education. A $50 bus fee was scheduled to take effect Monday, but it was canceled by the administration in an apparent attempt to head off a showdown with students who vowed they would not pay the bus fee. Due to an apparently effective student boycott, fewer than 1,000 bus passes have been sold by the administration to date. At least 3,500 passes must be sold to generate enough revenue to keep the current bus service operating. Officials say service will stop October 1st if enough passes are not sold. Last year's ban on the chemical Alar is making for a hectic harvest for New York's apple growers. This fall's crop is the first grown wholly without Alar. The chemical keeps apples on the trees longer, giving growers more time to harvest. Federal authorities banned Alar in May of last year after it was linked to cancer in laboratory animals. But farm experts dispute those lab tests, and they say the ban is crippling the apple industry. John O'Donnell, spokesman for the New York and New England Apple Institute, says the 600 growers his group represents lost 10 to 12% of their crop last year because of the Alar ban. Growers are warning consumers they'll see fewer of the apple varieties most helped by the chemical. The two that are especially popular in New York are the Red Delicious and Macintosh. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Paul Rosenthal.
And that's about it for this week's program. The Legislative Gazette is produced by WAMC Albany, the program made possible with grants from the Legislative Gazette, the newspaper about state government. Subscription information available by calling 518-473-6482. And Empire Information Services, serving New York and New England with electronic news release distribution. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Gilletley. The votes are in, they've been tallied, and the first round is over. I'm Dave Gilletley. Coming up on this week's edition of the Legislative Gazette, we'll wrap up primary day in New York State. Alan Shartok will join us for analysis of those races. Join us each week for the Legislative Gazette.